My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She's president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the country. We want to get her insights as the debate over rising Obamacare health premiums is now not only a major part of the presidential campaign, but a major policy debate as well, with President Obama and his allies saying the system's actually working really well. We just need a few tweaks to get it going where it needs to be. And Grace Marie, thanks very much for being with us.
Greg, always a pleasure.
Well, let's start with the main concept here. The president said this last week in Florida, and Jonathan Gruber, who's seen by many people as one of the principal architects of this law, and we're going to play several of his bites in an interview with CNN's Carol Costello here. He says, essentially, the system's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. Here's what he said.
Is Obamacare imploding?
No, Obamacare is not imploding. The main goal of Obamacare was twofold. One was to cover the uninsured, of which we've covered 20 million, the largest expansion in American history. The other was to fix broken insurance markets where insurers could deny people insurance just because they were sick or they had been sick. Those have been fixed, and for the vast majority of Americans, costs in those markets have come down thanks to the subsidies made available under Obamacare.
Grace Marie, those, he says, are the two major goals, and they've both been accomplished. How do you respond to that?
I think the American people, particularly those who are paying for Obamacare, would have a very different opinion. He's talking about the 85% of people in the Obamacare exchanges, about 9 to 10 million people, that get subsidies for their health insurance. Well, there are at least another 10 million Americans who are not in the, don't get subsidies. They either have to buy health insurance or pay a penalty. They are paying the full amount, at least a 25% increase. And if they live in Arizona, their average premium increase is 116%, not 25%. Many places across the country, the premium increases are much, much higher than that. And they not only are paying the higher premiums, but they have to pay the subsidies for those that are in the exchanges so that their premiums don't go up. Because the taxpayer is basically paying the difference. It doesn't make any much difference to the people in the exchanges whether the premiums go up, because the amount that they pay is capped. And the government takes over, the taxpayers take over the rest. So in a very narrow technical sense, Jonathan Gruber is right. But when the American people look at this, they're saying, wait a minute, isn't this called the Affordable Care Act? This is not affordable for me. And Doug Holtz-Aiken, the former director of the Congressional Budget Office, who now heads the American Action Forum, has actually done some calculations. He said this year, taxpayers will fork over $32 billion in subsidies for the 9 million people or so getting their coverage through the exchanges, and $50 billion next year. So it not only continues to be unaffordable to those who don't qualify for the subsidies, but it also is unaffordable for taxpayers.
Grace Marie, you've talked about the death spiral and that you believe we're in the at least the beginning of it, if not a little bit further into it than that. What are some of the next symptoms we should look for to suggest that we are, in fact, headed further and further down the spiral? What are the next things to domino over here?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting, Greg, to look at enrollment in the exchanges in 2017. And open enrollment starts on November the 1st. The administration thought, the Congressional Budget Office thought, that by now there would be about 21 million people enrolled in the Obamacare exchanges, which would make them more viable marketplaces because it would mean you had a pretty good cross-section of enrollees. Lots of healthy, younger people that don't cost a lot paying premiums for the smaller number of sicker, older people who are consuming a lot more health care. The enrollment now is only, as I said, they're saying it's higher, but actually people who paid their premiums, only about 9 million people. That may be relatively flat this year, as more and more of the healthy young people say, this is not worth it. I am not paying $1,800 a month for a health insurance policy that has a deductible of $7,000, $8,000, $9,000. I have to pay that on top of the premium before I get a penny's worth of benefit from my health insurance. People are going to say, thank you very much, but I'd rather just pay the penalty, which is why Jonathan Gruber's saying one of their solutions is, well, we need to increase the penalty so to force people into these exchanges. Thank you, Judge Roberts, for Justice Roberts, for putting us into this mess by calling the penalty a tax instead of what it really is. It's a penalty for not buying a private product / health insurance.
And here's the quote from that interview that you referenced.
Look, once again, there's no sense in which this has to be fixed. The law's working as designed. However, it could work better. And I think probably the most important thing experts would agree on is that we need a larger mandate penalty. We have individuals who are essentially free riding on the system. They're essentially waiting until they get sick and then getting health insurance. The whole idea of this plan, which was pioneered in Massachusetts, was that the individual mandate penalty would bring those people into the system and have them participate. The penalty right now is probably too low, and that's something I think ideally we would fix.
Two questions immediately come to mind after that quote, Grace Marie. The first one is, what is the impact then if the penalties rise and then people who accept the penalty because they can't afford the premiums end up getting soaked either way?
They do wind up getting soaked either way. They may still pay the higher penalties. And by the way, the only way that the law says that the penalty can be collected is from people who have a refund due on their taxes. Well, guess what people are going to do? They're going to change their deductions so that they don't have a penalty, don't have a refund due. Then the IRS won't be able to collect that money. But frankly, Greg, I don't see any way that if Republicans hold even one house of Congress, they will never vote to increase the mandate penalties on Obamacare insurance, or for not buying Obamacare insurance. They hate the individual mandate is the most despised part of a very unpopular law. To expect that Republicans are going to vote to increase those penalties, I don't know what alternative universe Jonathan Gruber is living in, but it's not the one that I see on Capitol Hill.
In a twisted way, though, Grace Marie, if in fact somehow, whether it's Democrats winning Congress entirely or somehow striking some sort of deal that would get this penalty increased, would forcing more people in bring the premiums down?
Well, it depends on who goes. What you're going to see is everybody's going to make that calculation for themselves. What is the premium versus what is the penalty? How much risk can I tolerate? I think you still would see the people who are more likely to be older and sicker. It's still going to attract more of the people that cost more than the cost than they're paying in premiums for their insurance. And I think that it's you have a perpetually dysfunctional market in these exchanges, which is a main reason that so many of the big insurers are pulling out. They see where this is going and they're saying, we're getting out now before we lose any more hundreds of millions of dollars.
And Gruber was asked about that by Carol Costello. Why are all the insurance companies getting out? Here's what he said.
Once again, I think the press here has been misleading. Some insurers are leaving. Other insurers are thriving. I think what you have is a system where we've shaken up the status quo, exactly what we expect a new innovation, disruptive innovation, if you will, to do. Insurers who are thriving the old system are finding this new system sort of hard for them. Other insurers are doing really well. And what's going to happen is the natural process as the market evolves. These premiums are going to increase. That's going to allow profitable opportunities for new insurers to enter. They are and bring premiums back down.
Any validity to that?
If I were sitting in my living room, I'd be screaming at the television set. The only health insurers that are thriving under Obamacare are those who have experience with Medicaid managed care. The narrowest of doctor networks, the lowest payments to doctors, so it's hard to get doctors to participate, and the narrowest networks of hospitals. What you're going to see is Obamacare insurance looking more and more like Medicaid, which, in my opinion, is one of the worst health care programs in the country, and there is certainly competition with the VA. So if you want a health care system that looks like Medicaid, then that's what you're going to get with Obamacare. And that seems to be what Jonathan Gruber is celebrating. He doesn't care about the quality of care or the access to care. All he cares about is a political agenda that people have an insurance card in their pocket that Democrats gave them. The American people are smarter than that. They know this system is too expensive for the coverage that they're getting, and they have too few choices, and they want a different deal. They want their money back on Obamacare.
A couple of questions before we let you go, Grace Marie. First of all, when it comes to the price people are paying even outside of the exchanges, Jonathan Gruber said this.
Now, for those remaining people, that is a problem, and that's something we need to address. But it's not a crisis. It doesn't mean the system's collapsing. And most importantly, it doesn't affect the 150 million Americans who get employer insurance who have actually seen the premiums fall dramatically relative to what was expected before Obamacare.
Two things there. The president has made that argument as well about people in the private system through the employer not being impacted at all. I want to get your thoughts on that. But also the difference in the language. Before the bill was passed, we were going to see premiums drop. Now premiums are dropping in their lexicon compared to what it otherwise would have been. What's your reaction to those things?
Right. Not to $2,500 less, right, but $4,400 more. It's still the premiums have been continuing to go up for employer coverage. At the same time, deductibles have been soaring for employer coverage. They are faced with many of the same mandates and requirements that they provide qualified coverage, and yet the way they're trying to keep the premiums at least a little bit lower is by increasing dramatically the out-of-pocket exposure and the deductibles that people have to pay. They consider that the insurance they're getting is lower quality for a higher price than before Obamacare passed. So I, again, don't know what kind of an academic la-la land Jonathan Gruber is living in when he says that this is not, you know, maybe a little bit of a problem for 10 million people in the individual market and 150 million people in the employer market that are suffering consequences from this over-regulation of the healthcare system, from the federal government getting involved in an insurance industry that it does not have any experience in regulating, and from requiring these huge levels of benefits, both preventive care as well as a long list of required coverage benefits that people can't afford. This is not the coverage they want. And the insurance industry would like to offer people a broader selection of products to buy coverage that they want and can afford, but the law won't let them do it.
Last topic, and this is less to do with Jonathan Gruber, but on to the president. I'm sure you at least saw reports, if not the actual speech that he gave in Florida last week. And he said the law needed tweaking for the people who aren't covered by subsidies on the public exchanges. And he said he had three general fixes to the problems. Number one, expanding Medicaid. He pressured the governors who haven't done that to do so. He said he wanted bigger subsidies to cover the cost of rising premiums. And he wanted a public option. So obviously more government involvement in all three of those. What's your reaction to his approach here? And do you think President Clinton would be any different?
You know, that sort of reminds me of that quote of, you know, what's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, even when you get the same results. What they want is more government regulation and more government spending to solve a problem created by too much regulation and too much government spending. This is not the answer. And, you know, I'm pleased to see that this issue is finally on the docket in the presidential election, because there is could hardly be a clearer distinction between the two major party candidates than on Obamacare. Hillary Clinton wants more of the same. She wants the public option. She wants more government spending. She wants to increase the subsidies through the Obamacare exchanges. And Donald Trump is saying, we need to start over again, and we need to give the American people more choices and put the states back in charge of regulating health insurance that actually has some experience with this and can tailor the policies and the premiums to the markets in their state. So I think it's an important distinction between the two candidates. It's an important issue, by the way, down ballot. There are several Senate races in which a candidate is running for a seat that he lost, Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, former Senator Bayh in Indiana, and they voted to put Obamacare over the top. And that is a major issue in their campaign, as it well should be. And, you know, fortunately, American people have a chance to have a say in this, not only in the presidential election, but also down ballot for congressional and Senate races.
Grace Marie, a lot to watch. Thank you for keeping track of it for all of us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig. Thank you.
Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute, one of the most respected healthcare policy organizations in the United States. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.